This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, in the news roundup, the political winds are shifting in taxpayers' favor in the Rio Grande Valley. Texans are fighting back against city land grabs and winning. And Governor Abbott is following through on his promise to get involved in the Republican primary. We'll also talk with Republican Party of Texas Chairman James Dickey, and we'll conclude with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan. Welcome back, Patriots. Lend your ears to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. We've got an action-packed program this week, so let's get started. All right, we'll get started with this week's news roundup by going down to the Rio Grande Valley to talk with Miriam with the Rio Grande Valley Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Miriam, you've got a great story up recently about a growing trend there in the valley, a good trend for taxpayers, with a big win in the city of Edinburgh. Tell us about it.
Yes, recently, Richard Molina, former city councilman, place one, ousted incumbent of 12 years, former mayor Richard Garcia. And it is where Molina was sitting on the city council is when he began to have a problem with the way things were being run. A lot of bad decisions, and I quote, were being made by the majority with taxpayer dollars and Economic Development Corporation monies, Molina previously stated. So earlier this year, Molina felt he had a responsibility to step up and run for mayor. Running on a platform of transparency and accountability, his slogans would read active, approachable, as well as advocate. He ran a clean grassroots campaign that brought light to various issues the incumbent Mayor Richard Garcia was performing at City Hall.
And so what was the margin of victory there? Was this a big win for the challenger?
Yes, actually it was. Edinburgh had a historic voting turnout for this election where three of the five seats for city council were up for grabs. Molina won with 4,518 votes, which is 54% of the vote, whereas Garcia received 3,278, 39% of the vote.
Wow. And so I guess I'm taking it, you know, from your article, this is a bit of a trend as taxpayers there in the valley are starting to pay more attention, you know, due to your reporting and just due to more awareness and grassroots activism there. They're starting to pay more attention to their local governments and to become more involved in trying to ensure that you have a clean government, transparent government, government that serves the people well. Is that kind of your take?
Yes, Molina's message overwhelmingly resonated with the people of Edinburgh as they voiced their opposition at the polls against former Mayor Richard Garcia. Constituents would argue that what ultimately exhausted the voters was Garcia's deferment on various issues regarding his overdue position as executive director of EDC for 14 consecutive years while also sitting as mayor.
Wow.
Bloated campaign expenditures on a certain political marketing consultant, and as well as the ever-increasing property taxes and various contracts given to friends and family members on the taxpayer's dime.
Well, thank you for that report, Miriam. We look forward to hearing more about it. I think there really is kind of an awakening going on there in the valley, and it's great to have you reporting on the ground about those goings-on. Thank you, Miriam.
Thank you.
All right, let's travel north up I-35 to talk with Aaron Anderson with the DFW Metroplex Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Aaron, you've been doing a ton of writing about the issue of forced annexation. We've had you on before to talk about this, but there's been this mad dash by cities across the state of Texas to basically do these land grabs, grab up taxpayers against their will before a December 1st deadline. So I wanted you to update us a little bit on what's going on. So taxpayers are winning some of those fights and some they're not winning. So what's happening with these various city fights?
Well, that's right, Tony. There's a big scramble for cities to grab land before that new municipal annexation reform law goes into effect December 1. And that's going to affect the bigger counties, 500,000 people or more. And there are fights going on in both counties and cities, big and small, to try to grab up land without getting the landowner's consent. And there have been some great successes, fortunately, for some of the landowners that I've been delighted to be covering. Up in McKinney and Collin County, there was a land grab going on that got stopped due to a lot of organized pushback from the landowners and the people in the city that are also affected by these annexations.
Yeah, that's kind of the big win there in McKinney that we're hearing about.
Yeah, that was a really big win up in Collin County, and which will be affected by the new annexation reforms. Another very near win going on in Kaufman and Dallas counties. The city of Mesquite has been trying to forcibly annex land before the December 1 deadline.
Mesquite is located east Dallas County, but they're trying to pick up land in Kaufman County to the east of Dallas, right?
Correct. Some in Dallas, but mostly in Kaufman County is what they've got their eyes on.
Okay. But are they kind of losing that fight?
They are. They've been fighting in court now and gotten temporary restraining orders against the city, against pursuing those annexations for now. They've got hearings scheduled on November 20th and the 28th, which is pushing them so close to that December 1 deadline that it doesn't look like they're going to have time to finish out their plans to forcibly annex land. So that's good news, too.
Now, you were recently in Belton for a hearing there, and you kind of had a story that you wanted to share with me. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Belton in Bell County is not going to be stopped right away by that December 1 deadline, but they're pushing through with some forced annexations. And a woman was at the hearing last night whose land was targeted. And she said that when she saw the map that showed that she was a property owner who had signed a development agreement agreeing to be annexed, she said she was ashamed to see it. She signed under duress and would take it back if she could.
Wow.
And that was just heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate all your reporting on this. I think some of these victories are due to, you know, the coverage and reporting that's going on and the grassroots standing up to say, no, we won't be forcibly annexed and we're not going to let cities grab us up before a December deadline. So thank you for that reporting. I'm sure these stories will continue to develop. So thank you a lot, Aaron.
Thank you, Tony.
Now let's turn to Zach Maxwell. Zach, you've got an article up about Governor Abbott getting involved in the Republican primary. Tell us about that.
That's right, Tony. Recently, Governor Abbott has answered his recent promise to get involved in the primaries. He recently endorsed Susanna Docupil, who is running against Liberal Republican Sarah Davis, who adamantly opposed Governor Abbott's Republican agenda this past session and special session.
Yeah, and so during the special session this year, Governor Abbott was advancing a very conservative agenda, and some of those pieces of legislation passed. A lot of those pieces of legislation failed in the Texas House of Representatives because of the liberal Republican leadership there and liberal Republican legislators like Sarah Davis, the state's only openly, kind of flamboyantly, openly pro-abortion Republican, pro-choice Republican. And so he's actually getting involved in this primary. It's a good sign for the governor kind of following through on his promise to hold these legislators who opposed his agenda accountable.
Yeah, he actually got a little bit of flack for endorsing Representative Paul Workman, but Paul Workman carried one of his bills, and so followed through.
Yeah, Paul Workman, a legislator from Austin, South Travis County, who carried the governor's what was called the tree bill. Really kind of been better identified as a property rights bill. It was about, you know, control of people's property against municipal regulations. Good bill. And they passed a version of that bill through the legislature. And so the governor followed through and gave Workman, you know, despite his kind of not so great record, a pat on the back and endorsed him for doing good things on the governor's behalf. And the same way he went there to West, you know, Harris County and said, okay, I'm going to oppose Sarah Davis. This is a liberal Republican who fought pretty much everything I'm for, mostly, and support this challenger, Susanna Docupil.
That's right. I look forward to seeing what happens in this race with Governor Abbott's endorsement. And, you know, Sarah Davis has been adamantly opposed, as we know, to all most of the Republican agenda and the Republican Party's platform
across the board. Her response was to call Governor Abbott and his supporters fringe extremists. So I don't know how that'll go over. But it's a good sign for the governor. I think the governor has to do more, though. There's a lot of other bad actors in the legislature who are facing challengers and up for reelection. And it'll be important for the governor to follow through on his promise to get involved and get involved in more of these primary elections.
Well, no doubt, I'm sure we will see much more of this.
Yeah, well, thank you for that report, Zach. Listeners can learn more about that endorsement and more about the primaries in general at TexasScorecard.com. Now, when we come back from the break, we'll have Republican Party of Texas Chairman James Dickey on the line.
More than ever, the people of Texas are making their voices heard, reclaiming their rightful spot as the true leaders in our republic. It's in that spirit that Empower Texans gathers each year with our friends and supporters from across the state, and I hope you will consider joining that party. Our Conservative Leaders Gala is a time for fun, fellowship, encouragement, and celebration, an opportunity to recognize just how far citizens have come. The 5th annual Conservative Leaders Gala will be held in Irving, Texas at the Irving Convention Center on December 2nd. For more information, to purchase tickets, or to find out about sponsorship opportunities, visit empowertexans.com/events. If you believe citizens are the real leaders in Texas, this will be an event you won't want to miss.
All right, for the Newsmaker segment this week, it's a pleasure to have on James Dickey, chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. Thanks for coming on the program, James.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, you were kind of elected. It was a big victory for the grassroots here in Texas. You were elected back in June and kind of bringing in some big and small changes to the Republican Party. Tell listeners a little bit about what you've been doing since June.
Yeah, it's funny. Fortunately, we've got some great elected officials in Texas, so Texans are not quite as surprised by this as a lot of other folks, unfortunately, are. But all I've been doing is keeping exactly to what I promised during my campaign when I ran. And it was because of the way it happened, it was a super short window. We had about 12 days to campaign and earn the support of a majority of the state Republican Executive Committee, the board of the Republican Party of Texas. And we did win. And since then, we've been doing exactly what I promised. And the big thing that I promised is that I would stand up for what the grassroots has asked the Republican Party to stand up for. And they asked for that last year. Every 2 years, they revise a platform at the state convention. And so I'm standing up for stuff that was passed long before I came along, as chair anyway, that was passed at the convention by the grassroots, because Texas is a uniquely grassroots up Republican Party, and it should reflect that at all levels.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of Republicans, when they think about the party and the party leadership, particularly at the national level, and there are great people involved in that, and I don't want to disparage any names, but people get frustrated. They think, you know, this is a party leadership that kind of stands against the grassroots, and I think it's this refreshing, exciting opportunity where you were kind of a rank-and-file Republican grassroots activist who's been elevated to the leadership there in this state. And I think it is a really unique opportunity for Republican rank-and-file grassroots Republicans to say, hey, this is my time to get involved and control the direction of this party.
Absolutely. It was a little bit of a surprise. It is a little bit of a surprise that in, 8 years, you can go from just showing up and voting in the primary and not having been active in the state's politics at all to then becoming a county chair, a precinct chair, then a county chair, and then the state chair. On the other hand, it's of all the places where it happened, it makes perfect sense that it would happen in Texas, because everything about the Texas Republican Party is built to honor and respect and recognize the authority of the grassroots Republican voter. That's how we're structured. Everything we do is controlled by the rules that are passed at our convention, which is decided by our grassroots delegates. So it's also the platform is voted on by them, and even the chair in a normal case the chair, the vice chair, the state board, all elected by the grassroots. It makes perfect sense that if it was going to happen, that it happened in Texas.
You know, I think in the Republican Party in Texas, a lot of people get involved. They get involved in politics and they kind of figure, like, how is the path? How can I be more involved, or how do I have more important roles on it? You know, the one thing that people universally respect is hard work. You know, it's those activists who go out there and knock doors and actually become involved that earn the respect. And I think that's kind of the path. You were the Travis County Republican Party chairman, and I think I received a lot of credit for your ability not just to work hard and handle things efficiently, but also to manage coalitions. I mean, there's all these different factions from kind of, well, I don't need to go into it, but there's all kind of different factions and points of views in the party, and it's important that, you know, I think you've shown an ability at that level and are showing an ability at the state level to say, you know, we can uphold our principles while also being respectful of all of these factions. And I think so when you do those things, when you work hard and do those things, it's kind of easy to rise, because we don't have enough of that.
Well, absolutely. I encourage people to do the same every day. And when I was campaigning, I had many of the SRC members, the state board members, they were very concerned about the disunity they had seen. Those of us in the Republican Party, we want to see unity. And because we know we'll be more effective, right? United we stand.
Right.
And so many of them asked me, you know, what will you do different that will help unite us? And the answer to me is so crystal clear, and it's exactly what I've done, is the easiest way to unite is to focus on the efforts that we agree on, the policies that we agree on. Let's focus on those. I can gladly work with any legislator, any elected official, if we're working together to reach a goal that the grassroots have asked us to reach.
Yeah,
it's not about personality. It's not about wing of the party or faction or anything else. It's about that goal. And, you know, the job of any leader at any level is to do that. Keep people focused on the goal and working towards the goal, and not letting all of the rest, all of the personality stuff, all the division stuff, not letting that get in the way of the important goals we need to achieve because our voters have asked us to.
Yeah, you know, I think I saw it play out over a series of state conventions going back over the past 6-8 years, where you would have one faction that was kind of a pro-business faction that wants, with regard to the issue of immigration and illegal immigration, you saw on the platform one faction saying, okay, I want to impose a platform plank that says the party's for guest worker program and kind of forms of amnesty and these kind of things. And those people were sincere. They're Republicans, and they're sincere about that position. But that wasn't the position, you know, the common, you know, universal position of the party. And then you almost saw a flip back the other way, where it was like, okay, we're going to get rid of all that. It's, you know, lock them up, throw away the key the other way. And I feel like we're starting to head towards some agreement to say, hey, what do we agree on? We agree on rule of law. We agree on securing the border. We agree on these things.
Yes.
And, you know, let's not go and take some minority position that is exclusive of other people who are legitimately in the party but have a little bit different point of view. Let's not take these kind of far extreme positions on these things. Let's unite around some common sense stuff that we do agree on.
Exactly. It is so important that we do that. And, you know, the reality is we've got 262 platform planks, and, you know, people all the time say that's way too many. Then again, there were 6,000 bills filed in the legislature in the last session.
Right.
So, you know, on its own, 262 is not a problem. What's really enlightening and what I encourage people with is, you know, we voted individually on every one of those items.
That's right.
And not one of those items got 100% of the vote. We are not some monolithic group, you know, in spite of the way our opponents would like to present us. We're not mind numb robots that only follow something that's been prescribed separately. And I remind people, these are not carved in stone. We as a group, we negotiate on these and revise them every couple of years. So we're not demanding utter, absolute unreserving fealty to every item. What we are looking for is people to believe completely in the principles of the party and then to work together on those platform planks to the greatest extent possible every time. And I tell elected officials, if there's a platform plank in the current platform that you have a problem with, you should lead with that. You should tell people, here's the reason why. Because of my personal position and experience, I've had this one thing that makes me not willing to fight for that one thing. Please, if you elect me, do so knowing I'm okay. You know, I'm not okay with this one thing.
And
respect the voters.
Yeah, people are sometimes negative on the platform, but when you go and read the actual platform, you go, this is some really good stuff, you know?
The things we fought for in the special session, you know, don't annex people without their own vote, right? don't put a do not resuscitate order in their file without getting the approval of them or their family. These were things. The idea that there were people who were fighting these, and there were people who were fighting these.
Absolutely.
Just boggled my mind because it is so much of it is so common sense. And while none of them got 100%, the vast majority of them got 80% plus.
That's right.
And that's why I say, you know, when we focus on those things we agree on, you know, we don't have to be divided when for any given legislator, we can agree on 250 of those items. Right. And
well, I would be
giving this plenty to work on to make the state better.
Yeah, I would be remiss if we before we end, we didn't have an opportunity to talk about your leadership on having the Republican caucus, the Republican legislators elect their leadership here in Texas. You know, most Texans may be unaware that in the Texas House of Representatives, you've essentially had a coalition government of some Republicans and most or all of the Democrats electing the leadership there. And there's been a strong effort, something that's in our platform, to say, hey, the Republicans should unite around a candidate, have a Republican Speaker of the House that will lead to more Republican victories on legislation, like you're mentioning, like, you know, do not resuscitate orders and, you know, property tax reform, common sense kind of stuff. That we've been calling for that. And you've been doing a great job of saying, hey, this is what the party's for, and we expect Republican legislators to do that. So I think I've got to give a lot of credit for what you've been doing with that lately. And also credit, you know, there's been a pushback and a kind of an attack on, oh, well, this is against the law and bad. And you're going, hey, First Amendment, baby, free speech. So,
yeah, exactly. First of all, the platform clearly states this is what our voters expect of our elected officials. And also, it's just plain common sense. I mean, voters did not send a near supermajority to both houses of the Texas legislature in order to have Democrats make a decision on something so critical as the Speaker of the House. And I'm confident we are fighting, and we are going to continue fighting for our elected officials to do what our voters have asked them to do. And it's straightforward. It's, you know, to me, it seems like politics 101. You should do what your voters ask.
Yeah, I think it's common sense, and it's great stuff. Tell listeners before we end, tell listeners how they can get more involved with the party and learn more about what you're doing and what the party's doing.
Thanks very much. Yes, the easiest way to stay in the loop on everything that's going on, what we're doing, is go to our website, texasgop.org. Sign up for our email list if you're not already on it. We keep people up to date on all the things that are going on. Let them know about alerts of ways that they can help. And then please join the grassroots club or otherwise support the party. You know, we are a grassroots-driven organization. I will be fighting for that, defending that. We'll be speaking out about that. To do that, we need your support. So please, grassrootsclub.com or go to texasgop.org and look for that grassroots club link. Sign up for the Grassroots Club. You'll get inside information. You'll get an early chance to get a better hotel spot for our convention, which is going to be in June in San Antonio. It's going to be amazing. And you can have a say in what our platform says, in what our rules look like, and whether or not I get reelected. And I hope you will come and participate in all of that.
Oh, well, thank you so much, James, for everything you're doing there. And thanks for being on the program.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
You know, Thanksgiving is about a lot more than turkey and stuffing and cranberry sauce and football. Michael Quinn Sullivan is on to tell us more about it in this week's commentary.
We think we know the story of Thanksgiving. The pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock, faced a harsh winter, famine, and disease, and then, with the help of friendly natives, learned how to survive. That only gets the story half right. It's nice for bedtime stories and feel-good paintings, but it misses one of the most important lessons of our early history. Howdy, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. The pilgrims weren't city slickers ill-prepared for the challenges of wilderness life, nor were they misguided about the challenges facing them in the New World. Yes, the native tribes were of immeasurable help, but the travails and trials of those pilgrims weren't the result of recklessness, ignorance, or chance. No, the problems the pilgrims faced and overcame were of their very own making, and generally through a very faulty ideology. William Bradford, governor of the colony, explains in his own hand what happened in his history of the Plymouth settlement. They imposed what he called communal service. We would recognize as a precursor to Marxist-style socialism. Everything, the land, the work, the crops, everything was held communally. Everyone was expected to work hard and receive only what they truly needed. As a result, as Bradford wrote, many would simply allege weakness and inability. Bradford reported that the young men who were most able and fit for service objected to being forced to spend their time and strength working for other men's wives and children without having any recompense. At the same time, Bradford added, quote, "The strong man, or the resourceful man, had no more share of food, clothes, etc., than the weak man, who was not able to do a quarter the other could," end quote. Bradford would note that community of property was found to breed confusion and discontent. No one had an incentive to work, so no one produced. After 3 years, the colony abandoned its communal life lest they die off completely. Bradford wrote that the colony's leaders divided the land among the families and allowed each man to plant corn for his own household and to trust themselves for what they could produce. As a result, he wrote, and I'm quoting here, "It made all hands very industrious, so that much more corn was planted than otherwise would have been by any means the governor or any other could devise, and saved him a great deal of trouble and gave far better satisfaction," end quote. Private property rights carried the day, contributing to what has become known as the Puritan work ethic. Labor was naturally divided, not politically imposed, with everyone doing what they could do best to their own benefit, and thereby increasing the productivity and happiness of the colony. By allowing private property and the basics of free markets, combining the local knowledge of Native Americans with the scientific techniques of Europe, the pilgrims had a harvest bountiful beyond comparison. The very first days of the American experience demonstrated what world history has shown repeatedly. Socialism fails, and fails miserably. We have much to be thankful for, including for those early settlers' wisdom in abandoning a deadly experiment. From all of us at Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan, wishing you and yours a happy Thanksgiving.
Well, that's all I've got for this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. From the entire Texas Scorecard team, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. And as always, you can check out all of our reporting at texasscorecard.com.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.